What is the No Spin News all about?
You know that this is a fact-based analysis news program. You know that. We avoid speculation. We don't do conspiracies here. We don't do party politics here. We're not nonpartisan. That's wrong. Not that. Okay, we are advocates for a stronger America and a more just society. We don't believe in communism. We don't believe in socialism. We don't believe in nihilism. We don't believe in the progressive woke culture. We think it is un-American. We don't support that. So you should know what we are, and it would then crystallize what we do.
Listen to the No Spin News. Subscribe to Bill O'Reilly's podcast feed wherever podcasts are available.
Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus.
Up next, Rob Smith is Problematic, part of the Gamers 360 Network.
This year we've got a brand new holiday, Juneteenth, which celebrates the official and the But this holiday is not going well with some conservatives who see it as just another move from the far left to fan the flames of racial division. And there are some liberals arguing that it doesn't go far enough, even saying that America needs a new flag. I want to tell you, they're both wrong. This is why it's never problematic. Our newest national federal holiday. You know, the far left has kind of like taken a hold of Juneteenth, and there are a lot of different factions trying to push this to sort of promote their own agenda. So I want to talk about, first of all, before we even get into that conversation, what is Juneteenth anyway? What is the history of Juneteenth? And I'm going to take this from Wikipedia. So Juneteenth is essentially Juneteenth National Independence Day, and trust me, there are some people that have a really big issue with that, and we'll get into this later. So it was a federal holiday in the United States commemorating the emancipation of enslaved African Americans, right? It has been celebrated annually on June 19th in various parts of the U.S. since 1966. And what this really boils down to, and the story is the origin, it started with the freed slaves of Galveston, Texas. They got the news that the war was over, and they were free in 1865 on June 19th, so that is where June 19th comes from. It is the official ending of slavery because there were some people that were kept in slavery because they kept this information from a lot of the slaves in the war. So that was the official day that slavery was completely over. This is what we celebrate when we celebrate Juneteenth, so that's what Juneteenth is. And so the question when we talk about Juneteenth is this really something that is celebrated in black culture? And you know, it is a yes and a no. And I'm going to be completely honest. This is not something that I was taught in school. I went to 99% black schools, basically my entire grammar school existence. My family, black, I was born in the black community, all of that stuff. I've never really started hearing anything about Juneteenth. And I'll be completely honest. Until I would say about 2 years ago, I was living in Harlem in New York City. Harlem is like, you know, Harlem is the blackest place you can live in New York City. It's a lot of black culture, a lot of black people, and you would see celebrations like this. So I didn't really start hearing about Juneteenth as a celebration. I was here until about 18 years ago when I was living in Harlem. And this is something that had kind of started to be celebrated, and now, about 18 years, you know, this is something that a lot of people were pushing to start celebrated on the federal level, right? And then, honestly, I'm going to get into what conservatives are saying and what liberals are saying about this. So I've been seeing a lot of conservatives saying that, you know, there's only one Independence Day, the 4th of July, the Juneteenth, this is Marxist holiday, you know, there's only reason one Independence Day, like this is divisive, this is, you know, another thing that the far left is trying to do, divide, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that they're getting this a little wrong, and I'll tell you why. We just said the entirety of 2020, as conservatives, libertarians, independents, et cetera, we just spent the entirety of 2020 basically blasting the left for tearing down American history, right? These people were tearing down statues. These people were trying to rewrite American history. These people were trying to say that America has no history. They were trying to say, with the 1619 Project, that America founded really from the 1619. So these people were trying to kind of rewrite American history in this way, and we rightly blasted them for it. So now, the Juneteenth thing comes up, and this is a real part of American history. This is a fact. So slavery and its existence in America is a fact. It was a fact. Democrats, by the way, were keeping their southern slaves enslaved because they did not let this information that the Civil War was over and that the slaves were freed. They did not let this information reach the slaves, right? So this is a very real thing that's happening in American history, and I know that some of the conservatives that follow me don't want to hear this stuff, because every time I start speaking to this, it's like, oh, you're a leftist, or you're a liberal, or all that other stuff, but a lot of the issues that were going on, that are going on in American society today, and a lot of the stuff that we're seeing right now, with the cancellation of critical race theory, with all of this divisiveness, and all this other stuff, there's a point that America has not really kind of reckoned with slavery and the effects that it still has in present day. So I think there's a lot of that stuff going on, and there's a validity to that. So I think that sometimes with conservatives, instead of just saying that we're just going to bash the same, how about we start taking control of the conversation? So I saw a missed opportunity here among conservatives to take control of the conversation and say, this is a part of American history, and educate people about the role that the Democrats had to play in the Civil War. Like, educate people about the role that Democrats played in the fact that they kept these slaves even longer after the war was over because they did not want them to have that information. So if we educate people about the real historical aspects of this stuff, we can win that conversation and start kind of owning that conversation, right? There is a black conservative that I follow. His name is Damani Felder. I believe that his Twitter is at Damani Felder, D-A-M-A-N-I. Very smart guy. There's YouTube, there's a lot of this stuff, and he really thinks about this stuff. And this is what he tweeted. He said, making Juneteenth a federal holiday isn't all bad. It'll give us the entire day to educate people about the day southern slaves found out they were finally free, in spite of the Democrats' best efforts to keep them in chains. And I think that this is a brilliant take on that, and this is absolutely right. And I think that as conservatives, we lose sometimes because there are so many conservatives that just want to be so reflexively anti anything that seems to be being pushed by the left, and it gives them the space, and it creates a space for them to say, oh, and to say to African Americans, other people, I look at these conservatives, they hate you, they don't want to talk about slavery, they don't want to talk about any of this stuff. And also, it gives them the opportunity to conflate Juneteenth and things that are involved in actual American history with critical race theory that has very little, if anything, to do with American history, because critical race theory is a perversion of American history to pursue a leftist agenda. So I think that conservatives get this stuff wrong, right? And obviously, like I said, liberals are taking this and they are, you know, just running with it. And this is where I'm going to tell you what the liberals are thinking about this. I'm going to tell you where conservatives have a point in the criticism of where the left is taking it. So liberals are saying right now that, you know, we need to talk about slavery all the time. And there is something to be said with when you do the hashtag Juneteenth on Twitter, what does it happen? Like the Black Power Fist and the Pan African colors, you know, red, green, and black, right? So if that's like something that is a divisive symbol, I don't know what it is. And another thing that legislators get right about this. There were only 14 Republican Congress members that voted against making Juneteenth a federal holiday. One of them was Representative Chip Roy, and this is what he said, and I thought that this was a very valid point. He was against this by pure semantics. What he said was that, I think that this should be called Emancipation Day. It does not need to be called Independence Day because America already has one Independence Day, right? And so there is a point to that. And I think that conservatives really should have made that argument. But I think that we have so many people, and this is what I like about just being a political commentator. For now, I know everybody's like, oh, what's the Congress, what's the Congress, what's the office, do all this stuff. But I like being in this space right now because I feel like I don't have to, you know, there's nobody that I have to answer to, like, oh, I have to say the Democrat line, or I have to say the Republican line, or anything like that. I can just say what I feel. And if conservatives, and particularly those conservatives that are in charge, those that have elected office, if they knew enough about this and they said, well, you know, I don't agree with this being independent either, they could have made a united front and said this. But instead, you have a lot of these conservatives that are so quick to roll over to whatever the left says because they don't want to be seen as sort of racist or whatever. It's almost like they don't know what they're rolling over for, and it's just like in the same way that a lot of these conservatives that are always complaining, it's almost like they don't even know what they're complaining about. So liberals are saying right now, and they're using this Juneteenth framework, and obviously, you know, this is going to restart the reparations conversation, so this has already done that. So that's coming. And this is what liberals are saying. You know, Macy Gray, who's a black soul singer, and she did an op-ed where she basically thinks that we need a new American flag, because obviously, to liberals, nothing is ever enough. It is not so much that Juneteenth is now a federal holiday, now we need a brand new flag. This is what Macy Gray said. The American flag has been hijacked as code for a specific belief. God bless those believers, they can have it. Like the Confederate, it is tattered, dated, divisive, and incorrect. It no longer represents democracy and freedom. It no longer represents, frankly, all of us. It is not fair to be forced to honor it. It is time for a new flag. She goes on to suggest a redesigned version that has 52 stars, which obviously gives Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico safe. Obviously, this is leftist insanity. This is what a lot of conservatives have right, because they do realize that the left never stops. And Macy Gray starting this conversation right now, I am telling you, this is the conversation that the left is going to start having over the next 10 to 20 years about a new flag. So my advice to conservatives is realize that this conversation is starting and to hold the line on this and stop it at the very beginning of it right now. If you guys ignore, if conservatives ignore the fact that this is a conversation that people are going to start having, if you ignore this stuff, it is going to keep being allowed to fester, and it's going to keep on going. There is nothing more divisive than to say that America needs a new flag that is politically representative of all of us. And if you want to get a sense of where this goes, look at the LGBT pride flag, right? The LGBT pride flag used to be a rainbow, and that rainbow represented equality, but now the far left took a hold of it, and they said, well, there needs to be black and brown stripes, because black and brown people aren't represented, and there needs to be flame stripes, there needs to be all of this other stuff. So if you allow conservatives, if you allow the left to take hold of this conversation, they will eventually destroy the American flag that is supposed to represent all of us. Now, has the American flag represented everybody in this country from the beginning, you know, from the beginning of history when it was first created? Absolutely not. And we need to be able to be open enough to say that flag did not represent people. It certainly did not represent enslaved people. It did represent women. It did represent a lot of people who weren't given the right that the founders and people that looked like them that created this flag had. But that is not to say, and this is a conversation that we need to have, that is not to say that flag does not represent every American in the United States right now. And that is the argument that needs to be made. So, in essence, for conservatives, I think that this is an opportunity to take the conversation and make it about American history, because Juneteenth is American history. And like I said, when it comes to campaign promises to African Americans, was to make Juneteenth a federal holiday, right? So my advice to conservatives for the future, because I promise you, I know how this goes, because I remember even doing statements about Juneteenth last year when it was a campaign promise in the Trump fight. Find a new line of attack for this and go on the offense about this, because if not, this is the conversation that you guys are going to be having every single year. It's not going to go anywhere, and every year the less, it's going to start having more and more voices that are talking about a new American flag. So, conservatives, if you don't figure out a different way to have this conversation, if you don't plan an offense, and if you don't literally wrap your arms around this holiday and use it as an opportunity to educate Americans about the Democrat place in all this, they will just keep dunking on it. They will just keep making it seem like you're on the wrong side of history, and they will use this as a jumping off point to start trying to redesign this American flag, which is exactly what they want to do. Listen to what I'm telling you. I know these people. I know the left. This is exactly what they are doing. Do not play this game. Take this opportunity to educate yourself about it, and then for the Juneteenth, every time this comes up, do not have this same conversation. You need to start having a different conversation about Juneteenth.
Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus.
So this is something that makes me crazy, it makes me sad, it makes me pull my hair out. Two of my favorite conservatives, Tim Scalise and Candace Owens, are fighting their in a little Twitter feud right now. So why? So let's just basically break down exactly why these two really beautiful, talented, brilliant conservative women are going back and forth on Twitter and on social media. And so this entire conversation, so Kendall has a lot of thoughts about what is going on with these cities right now, what is going on with cities like, you know, Baltimore, Detroit, Chicago, Philly, all of these cities that have been run into the ground by Democrats, right? And the African Americans in the city, in these cities, that are just basically being left behind. Candace Owens thinks that we need to just let these cities in. That the Democrats have made their bed, and the people that keep voting for them really do just have to kind of like deal with it, right? So this is her thought on this stuff, right? So she thinks that we should just let these cities go. I don't think that she's saying that, oh, I don't care about white people, like, we need to let them go, whatever. I think that she's saying, overall, we need to just let these cities go. Right, so this is what she's saying. And, you know, Kim Clayton retweeted this guy named Giovanni Busso, I think they do this a lot of local stuff in Baltimore as well. And if you know Kim Clayton, you know that she had a super viral ad campaign. She ran in Baltimore as a Republican. It was an unsuccessful one, but she became a star. She was able to raise a lot of money for a lot of different people and was really able to shine a light on what is going on in Baltimore because she, you know, she cares about what's going on in Baltimore. And so she retweeted this guy, Giovanni Busso, who basically said, Candace Owens saying to ignore Baltimore shows what we said all along about her having zero concerns about voters. She can weaponize the city as a talking point, but turn around and say, F them. The audience is never black people. She's exposing herself. Do I think there's people in the city for complacent solutions? That, yeah, absolutely. I know all of these people, and I told them that. This is the issue that I have. And people are going to accuse me of both sides and get it, but you know, sometimes I have to be neutral. Like, I don't take sides in any of these things. Like, I just want to see the bigger picture. And so, one aspect of the picture is this. Tim Clayton gets a lot of flack, okay, for the fact that he became a superstar, where he paid a ton of money in muscle weight. lost the weight. I think it was about 70 to 30, right? And I think for a lot of people, when I was at an event, I was at a function a couple of weeks ago, and there were some big names, there's people that all of you have heard of, all of you know, that had a lot of criticism for the fact that she had just raised so much money for this race. And there was a little valid criticism in the fact that, and this is their argument, that she raised so many millions of dollars in a race that was never even close, that was not close, right? And there were some races that really could have been flipped and could have used an extra $500,000 million, whatever, and that could have flipped those races, right? So that's the argument that these people are making. And that is a fair and valid argument, right? But I feel like sometimes the people that are making that argument are just saying, and this is kind of the same thing that kind of Candace is saying, that, well, if these races are quote unquote unwinnable now, and if she's only winning 40% of the vote, what is the point of investing any time or any energy or any money into even a terrific candidate like Tim Kasich if all we're going to do is to lose, you know, by literally 70-30, right? And I fundamentally disagree with that argument. And this is what I'm going to say, that I disagree with Candace's take on that, if this is the take that she has, because I've been finding it very hard to kind of, you know, figure out, because, you know, a lot of these, you know, the seats have been wiped and all that stuff. But I think that I have the overall message right, because this is the message that I've heard Candace deliver before. And so the issue that I have with that, which is the overall message, is that if we say, and we talk a lot about reforming in these cities, and we talk a lot, Black people, we talk a lot about, you know, we care about these people, these cities are being filled by Democrats. We can't just talk and make zero investment in these communities, right? And so don't run good candidates in these communities, don't invest in candidates and a lot of the stuff that needs to happen for the tide to start turning in these communities, right? So we can't use the communities as talking points and just say, well, look at how bad it is in Baltimore, look at how bad it is in Philly, look at how bad it is in Detroit, look how bad it is in Chicago, if we're not willing to make the investment in these communities. And I think that's the message, and that's the point that I think in place of trying to make, you know? And I think it's a very valid point, and I think that a lot of conservatives that are making this point, they don't realize that what we are doing right now, we're not necessarily going to see the fruits of immediately. Anybody who knows anything about politics knew that when they're investing in some faith, that they're investing in this future, and we're talking 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now, because that race would always be just 15 or 20, or it may have even been deep, or 36, whatever it was. Was it unwinnable? Absolutely. Do we need to invest in actually showing up for these Black voters in places like Baltimore, Philly, Detroit, Chicago? Absolutely. And I think that that's where I think the message is kind of lost from. So this is a broader conversation about what is actually going on in these gun-controlled cities. I remember going to Baltimore, and I will critique myself about this. I went to Baltimore in 2019, and I shot a super viral video about, like, how crazy Baltimore was, you know? Because it was something that became an issue with then-President Trump at the time. He was kind of getting into some arguments with, you know, some of these big congressmen on the left, and they were saying, well, you know, you don't care about Black people. And he's like, yo, we are basically representing these places, and these places are going to complete Trump, right? And so I went to Baltimore, did a viral video from the USA, and I just walked around and I was just like, this is bad, like, this is what is going on here. Because I think myself, sometimes I'm a commentator, I spend a lot of time doing this. There's more that I think that we can all do on the ground in a lot of these different cities, and I think that's the conversation. So I disagree with the idea that we're just supposed to let these cities go. And I tire of sort of kind of like the donor class and all these people, and they're saying, well, we don't want to waste our money, we don't want to waste our money. And so to them, I would say this, if you actually care about the people that live in these cities, if you care about getting these African-American voters, if you care about turning them around, you're going to have to make a long-term investment into this. You're going to have to make a long-term investment into these cities. You're going to have to make a long-term investment into people that can carry these messages to these cities, because that is what Democrats have done. And it's not just overnight that Democrats had gotten to the point to where literally African Americans vote for Democrats up there to 90%, which did not happen overnight. So if you want to make that change, if you want to really get into that, then we're going to have to start investing in taking places for the world, and we're going to have to start investing into these cities, and we're just going to have to start showing up and showing people that Republicans and conservatives care. And that's where we're losing right now. I understand what candidates are saying, and I understand the anger that is behind that idea, because I've been angry about that stuff. Because if you're a black conservative, you know you just get dragged all over the internet by black Democrats all the time. Like, if you're just talking to white people, you know, you don't care about black people, you don't care about these things, like, that's actually incorrect. And I think it's a little messy of Kim actually retweet this Giovanni guy who that was basically like an attack that I was communicating with everybody who says about this or whatever. It was a little messy to kind of like go into it like that. But I think that for both of these people, for Kim and Candace, they are making valid points. And I think that that's what you have to say, that these points are valid. It's a valid idea. I don't think that it's the correct one, that people are like, we need to just let these cities go because this is a democratic agenda for these cities. And it's a valid point also for Kim Stacey to say, I'm black, I care about Baltimore. People that donated to me, donated to me because they cared about me and they believed in my mission and they believed in investment in these communities, right? And I've been hearing some conservatives say, well, you know, we've been over backwards for the black vote, and you know, we need to say this on day, blah, blah, blah. And you guys are missing the point, because the results are not going to be tomorrow. The results may not even be in, you know, in 2022 and 2024. We are making gains, so we have to keep going. And, you know, Kim has basically just squashed this. She ended it up with this, and I think that is very valid. It's very classy to kind of like put a button on this and then move on. She says, while conservatives are going back and forth with each other on social media, including me, Stacey Abrams and company are registering voters in Georgia and recruiting candidates and volunteers. 2022 is right around the corner. We can't afford to lose. I think he's actually right about this. And like I said, I'm not taking sides here. I'm a fan of both of these ladies, and I don't think that there is a side to take here. If there is a side to take, it is on the side of the people. And it is on the side of the idea that we as conservatives have to show up. And that includes investing money in candidates like Kim who are showing up in the community, and that includes showing up in the ways that Candace Owens shows up, where, you know, she's got the Blexit Foundation, she's trying to write on this stuff. So we have to be able to show up in both of those ways. So I don't like it. I don't like seeing, you know, black conservatives arguing, particularly, you know, the two basically biggest black female conservatives there are in the movement, which is Kim Stacey and Candace Owens. But I think that there is a broader conversation that can be had, and if anything good can come out of this Twitter beef, it's that we can all start talking about this broader conversation and what that means for the movement that both of these ladies are fighting for. Next up, I just posted over. So, guys, I just posted on a show called I'm Right with Lisa Kelly, which is over on the first. If you don't know what the first is, I invite you to Google it. Like, I do some stuff on there. The first is basically a pro-America sort of free speech digital network. You can find a lot of different places. I believe their website is thefirstontv.com, so you can check that out if you want to watch this full episode. But I wanted to share with you a couple of segments that I did talking with this really great guy named Bobby Barat, who is a politics, culture, and sports writer for Outkick.com. We had a long conversation about Joe Biden, Colbert, Wilkinson, and how ESPN went with and broke. So I want to share this with you.
Take your questions, and as usual, folks, they gave me a list of the people I'm going to call on. So, Jonathan, Associated Press.
And if you think there's a reason why he has a pre-approved list of people to call on, this is what happens when he goes off script.
Why are you so confident he'll change his behavior, Mr. President?
Yeah, I'm not confident he'll change his behavior. What do you do all the time?
So
when did I say I was confident?
You said in the next 6 months
you'd
be able to determine.
What I said was, let's get it straight. I said what will change their behavior is that the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world.
So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin?
Right? You don't understand that. You're in your own business.
Just an angry old man. All right. Look, I want to bring in Bobby Barak, politics and sports writer at Outkick.com. So, Bobby, look, I want to ask you a question. I want to get, first of all, before I go into the questions, what is just your reaction to Biden snapping at the CNN reporter?
Rob, first of all, thanks for having me. You know what that reminds me of? When you're in like seventh grade and you prepared all night to cheat for a science test, and the answers on your cheat sheet are different than the answers the teacher gave you for the test. Like, because when you're cheating on a test, you got to follow that script line for line. And if the questions the teacher puts on the test are different than the study guide, you're lost. You're going to fail. That's exactly what Biden did here when he had a different reporter call on him. I believe that was CNN's Caitlin Collins. He was just lost, Rob, not being able to stick to his script. He just knows he's going to fail. By the way, what is he so mad about? Because she asked a question? Isn't that his job to answer a question? This guy acted like he asked some offensive, or she asked some rude, offensive question. Mm-hmm. She asked a question that the media hacks that were asking questions before her should have asked Biden off the top. I mean, as a country, we deserve an answer for that one. And I don't think we're going to get it, Rob, because I'm pretty sure Caitlin Collins' boss at CNN are probably going to say, hey, next time, take it easy on Biden. Don't be so harsh.
Yeah, probably. You know, don't be so harsh to our guy. And you know why Biden's probably so mad is because he was on his way to a nap and she ruined it. She made him late for his nap. That was what was going on there. And it's really funny. So we see this situation with him snapping at Caitlin Collins over at CNN. You know, we see the flashcards that he has. We see the list of pre-approved reporters. Remember, in the first press conference that he did that he had to get pressured into doing, he had a literal Facebook. He had a book with the faces of the reporters that he was able to call on. You know, look, it's all a joke. But I want to ask you another question. So do you think that this clip, and, you know, this sparked a lot of the sort of blue check, you know, journalist Twitterati outrage. They said, well, he shouldn't, you know, be talking to a reporter like this because remember, you know, this is supposed to be the good guy now. We're going to help you out. Right. So do you think that this indicates that the tongue bath from the media for Biden is going to be over, or was this just a blip? Do you think that they're just going to go back to covering for him full time?
They're absolutely going to cover for him because here's the interesting thing, Rob. Biden's cognitive decline is so apparent now, but it's media and Democrats that tell us we can't talk about that. But what's so fascinating and what a lot of people are forgetting, they're the ones that started this during the primaries. Yes. When they thought Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren still had a shot to beat him. They're the ones that initiated this conversation. So they're going to stick with Biden as long as it's advantageous for them too. I mean, if for some reason Biden says, you know, I'm not going to run in 2024, which he shouldn't, and he turns it over to Kamala Harris, then I think the media might come back and say, hey, that old guy was kind of rude. He wasn't a very good president. You know, what he did, the pipeline, taxes, this guy's kind of a disaster. But they're going to stick with them as long as it's beneficial to them, stick with them. I mean, all you have to do is look back to how they covered him at the first debate when Kamala Harris and him went at it. They all took Kamala Harris aside. Now those same media pundits are saying, okay, this guy is the savior because, well, he's not Donald Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, even speaking of Donald Trump, so back when Donald Trump was president, there was all sorts of speculating about his mental faculties, cognitive, like all of that other stuff. So that was an open and honest conversation that we were allowed to have. But, honestly, when you said that stuff about Joe Biden, I was actually kind of taken aback. I was like, are we allowed to talk about this? So now it's like really openly talking about the fact that this is a man in his late 70s, Joe Biden, and even having this conversation is sort of verboten, which I think is very strange. So good for you for bringing that up. And I think that's a real conversation that we should be allowed to have because we should not let the left dictate conversations that we are allowed to have. So good on that. So I wanted to ask you a question about a new piece you got out here. It's called At ESPN, Fear Gives Talents Leverage. And I know that you were talking, we're talking a lot about wokeism. I talked about it in my monologue earlier this show, how wokeism is just taking over all of media, most of media, which you and I are both a part of. But I want you to talk about that piece for me a little bit and just explain to me what exactly is going on at ESPN with the whole wokeism.
Yeah, so in short, sure, ESPN is hemorrhaging viewers for several reasons. One, cable or cord cutting, people switching to streaming, mm-hmm. people interest in sports is down. And also, just as you said, they've stuck a middle finger in half the country. So the half the country says, okay, we're out. So in that process, their obvious result is they need to slash salaries. So people that were making maybe $1.2 million a year hosting SportsCenter might be down to $500,000. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that they're afraid to do that to certain people. And you got them up there on the screen, Bomani Jones, because Rob, if they cut Bomani Jones and, you know, woke loser Stan Verrett, who's on there now, they're going to instantly go to the New York Times, Katie Nolan, and say, they cut me, they suspended me, they let me go because they're racist. They let me go because I called Donald Trump a white supremacist. But vice versa, Trey Wingo, they have no problem letting him go because what's he going to say? Oh, they got rid of me because I said Brett Favre was better than Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. That narrative doesn't fear by them. I mean, I've talked to sources all the time, and they say the biggest thing, Bobby, is that these executives don't want a disgruntled former employee mm-hmm. to go on record and say, oh, I was treated bad because of my race, my gender, my beliefs. So fear gives them leverage now. 5 years ago, an ESPN talent had leverage if they had an offer from NBC, CBS, or Fox. Now they have leverage if ESPN is afraid of the narrative they can spin upon being let go.
You know, that is that's a very interesting perspective because we can see it now. We can see it now with everything that goes on. You know, somebody, one of their black or female or both anchors gets fired, they run to the New York Times, and then all of a sudden ESPN is racist. So that's a really bold perspective, and good for you. You got a lot of bold perspectives. I need to start reading more of your stuff. This is good stuff. Okay, so last question, and I want to go to this. So there is a new commercial from Indeed that is encouraging people to use preferred pronouns. I want you to look at this.
Hi. Hi, I'm Taylor. Hi, is here for my interview?
I'm Dorian and I use the pronouns he, him. Are you comfortable sharing how you would like to be addressed?
Thank you for asking. I use they, them pronouns.
Great. Well, I'd love to hear more about your skill set.
Okay, look, so before I get your reaction to this, I want to give mine because this is the first time that I've ever seen this. And as I said in the monologue, everybody knows I'm a gay guy. I just don't identify with the far left, LGBTQIA, all of this other stuff. When I see that commercial, it makes me actually feel bad for these people because it's not about getting a job and it's not about what you have to bring to the table professionally. This is all about identities and pronouns and all of this other stuff. And I think that it turns, you know, look, LGBT, whatever, it turns these people into these victims and identitarians who see the entire world through the lens of whatever their identity is. So that's just my two cents. I had to get that out. What do you think, Bobby?
Well, what you just said to me, I think is powerful because what you told me is, okay, you're a gay man, but you're Rob Smith. You want to be known as Rob Smith. You don't want to be known as a gay man. And that this whole pronoun debate, I believe that's what it is. They say it's a service to the LGBTQIA plus whatever you want to call them, whatever is a group or whatever, but they're really denigrating those people down to just that identity. They don't want to be looked at as people. They're looked at by their sexual orientation. And Rob, that's a disservice to them because they're not benefiting from that. They're being told they're not an individual. So I'm just so happy you said that because what that says to me, some people say, oh, well, that might be bold. All you're saying, Rob, is you want to be known as Rob Smith. You want to be known as the person you are and for the things you say. And I've said this entire social justice movement is about minimizing people down to their race and gender combination. And this goes back to that ESPN conversation. Rob, I believe that those people at ESPN have strategically told their bosses, look at me as a black woman, as a black guy, as an Asian man. Don't look at me for who I am on air. And I can't think of anything more dangerous than being judged by those qualities and not who you are. I mean, to me, that was supposed to be the entire direction we were supposed to move away from, and now we're moving back into it so aggressively. And I think it's so problematic and dangerous for everybody involved.
Yes, that movement is not progressive, it is regressive. Bobby 100%. Barak, politics and sports writer at OutKick.com, thank you so much for joining me, and you've got a big new fan here, man. It's good stuff, man.
Rob, thanks for having me. By the way, Jesse gets a new show, I'm assuming a new raise, works only 4 days a week.
I mean, Jesse, what do you know?
Where are you at, man?
Execs, we're listening. You know, I think we got a new fill-in. All right, thanks a lot, man.
All right, man.
Bill O'Reilly here with a big announcement. You can now watch new episodes of the No Spin News live on Samsung TV Plus. Tune in each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV for breaking news, honest analysis, and the best election coverage in America. Please join me, Bill O'Reilly, at the First TV, now available on Samsung TV Plus. Start watching today on your Samsung television, Galaxy devices, or the Samsung TV Plus mobile app. Check out the No Spin News each weeknight at 8 p.m. on the First TV, Samsung TV Plus.